This week in KMA Land, successful launch sends Artemis II to the moon. KMA Land space veteran comments on historic launch. Nishtabana Water Defenders marks 1-year anniversary. Mills County snuffs out burn ban, so does Page County. DOT announces plans for Highway 2 closure, and KMA Land residents warned of the latest tech scam. I'm Mike Peterson. It was no April Fool's joke. For the first time in more than a half century, astronauts took off for the moon this week.
4, 3, 2, 1, booster ignition, and liftoff. The crew of Artemis II now bound for the moon.
Artemis II launched from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida at 5:35 p.m. Central Time Wednesday. Minor problems delayed the liftoff 11 minutes past the scheduled launch window's opening. Four crew members, Mission Commander Reid Wiseman, Pilot Victor Glover, and Mission Specialist Christina Cook, and Canadian astronaut Jeremy Hansen, are flying aboard an Orion spacecraft on a 10-day mission, with a lunar flyby scheduled on days 5 and 6. It's the first moon mission for the United States since Apollo 17 in late 1972. Former astronaut and author Clayton Anderson spent 167 days in space, including two missions aboard the International Space Station. The Ashland, Nebraska native described his emotions leading up to the historic flight in an interview with KMA News.
Well, I think I'm just as excited, well, as they might be. I'm very envious of the opportunity that they're being presented today. I am praying for the success of the entire mission and wishing them the best and watching with anticipation just like everyone else.
Three of the astronauts, Wiseman, Glover, and Koch, are space veterans. While saying prior space experience helps, Anderson says all four were trained and are familiar with Artemis's systems.
It's kind of adjusting to a camping trip with three or four of your best buddies, right? I think that they're all highly qualified to do this, even Jeremy, who hasn't flown in space before. The guy's a fighter pilot as well, and so I think he's used to challenges such as these, and they'll all be fine. And the other thing to note is that one of NASA's goals for this was to put the first female and the first person of color to the moon, and they're doing that with this mission. Now, they won't touch down, but that'll come in the future.
Though space missions have their risk, Artemis II is traveling into deep space. But Anderson says NASA is prepared for the long, perilous trip.
They're going to be on a free return trajectory, it's called. It was devised back in the Apollo days in the 60s. And so as they head toward the moon, they do their lunar transition burn to get them on the path to the moon. They don't have to do anything else, and the gravitational pull of the lunar surface will help put them on a figure eight back to Earth so that there won't be an issue of having to light an engine and not having that engine light and those sorts of things.
Anderson says the success of Artemis II is important not only for NASA but also the United States, as it faces space competition from other countries, most notably China, which has signaled its intentions to land humans on the moon.
That we need to be the preeminent space faring nation in the entire world, always. We need to lead the way. We need to do this. I'm excited that the new administrator, Jared Isaacman, has changed the tone a little bit such that we will move more expeditiously, more efficiently, more quickly toward the goal of getting humans back on the moon from America. And so I think that's a good path. I also think that he is willing to look at the commercial guys and partner with the commercial guys to make things happen the way we need to have them happen.
Another big question is which company will supply NASA with a lunar lander. Both Elon Musk's SpaceX and Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin companies are developing vehicles to transport astronauts to the lunar surface as early as 2028. Officials with the KMA Land organization this week celebrated 1 year of advocacy for clean water. The Nishtabana Water Defenders held its first annual meeting on Sunday in Atlantic, marking the group's first anniversary after it was formed in the wake of the 2024 East Nishtabana River fertilizer spill that occurred at the new cooperative facility in Red Oak. Comprised of citizens from throughout southwest Iowa, the nonprofit was formed last year as a local chapter of Water Defenders, focusing on organizing, advocating, and educating to improve water quality throughout the Nishtabana watershed in the state. One of the group's newest board members, Kevin Eicher, says he got more heavily involved with the organization after the Iowa Attorney General's office settled with new cooperative last year. Eicher also outlined his first experience with the fertilizer spill when he and his grandson were looking for a fishing spot along the river.
We were hunting for a place to fish. All we could see up and down the river was dead fish. It was at least a week before I found out what happened. And my question at that time was, how did this happen? How did we get here?
Eicher says residents within the 10-county watershed are encouraged to regularly test the water near them, preferably along the Nishtapatna River, and record the results on the group's website. Fellow board member Judy Reese says the group hopes to provide better equipment to residents interested in participating in the program.
There are programs like this across the state where this is already being done. So there is a precedent, there is a model to have this done. It's something that we were talking about just to continue to promote community science, get people engaged, thinking about the water, what's in the water.
Last month, the local group filed a lawsuit against New Cooperative regarding the spill that killed nearly 750,000 fish along the roughly 60-mile stretch of the Nishtapatna River. In the lawsuit, the water defenders call the AG settlement grossly inadequate, citing three counts of nuisance, negligence, and trespassing. James LaRue is one of the attorneys representing the Nishtapatna water defenders in the litigation. At Sunday's meeting, LaRue says the primary goal of the lawsuit is to prevent another spill.
The whole purpose of law, particularly laws involving tort and everything, is to ensure that each of us acting in our own ways are doing so in a way that makes it safe to live for others. That's why we don't allow trucks to go 100 miles an hour down the interstate, although they would probably like to if they could get there sooner, all the rest, because we know it's unsafe to the rest of us, let alone to the drivers of the vehicles. We are arguing that there are certain standards of conduct that can or should be imposed on any entity by New Cooperative, and for whatever reason,
while saying the group isn't trying to demonize individuals or entities within the agriculture industry, LaRue says they want to ensure laws are followed and to keep the state's waterways and citizens safe.
I think what the membership would like is, when all is said and done, that the entity here in Red Oak is safe, that there's almost no likelihood of it ever happening again, and the people would feel safe by using the for fishing or for boating, that they don't have to worry what's going to come into the river from it, but also see if we could encourage the company to improve all of its multiple locations.
Officials of the organization also indicated Sunday their group raised roughly $14,000 in its first year. The organization plans to use the collected funds for the lawsuit, purchasing billboards, and continued community outreach. Well, recent rain snuffed out burn bans in KMA land this week. Mills County Emergency Management officials announced its bans lifting as of noon Thursday. County Emergency Management Coordinator Travis Hitchcock tells KMA News the ban was lifted based on consensus from the county's fire chiefs in order to let producers take advantage of increased precipitation in recent days.
With the precipitation that we received, you know, over the last, 24 hours or so, has started to kind of lessen the dry fuels, that were present out there. So we wanted to give, the folks in the unincorporated areas the opportunity to burn off anything, that they haven't been able to with the open burn ban being in place, for the last couple weeks.
Continuing drought conditions coupled with high winds and warm temperatures provided the perfect condition for a rash of brush fires, forcing the county to institute the burn ban last month.
We don't want to get ourselves into a condition, that I think some other, places, whether it's Nebraska or other places in Iowa or throughout the surrounding states where, something kind of gets away from us and then it rapidly grows, beyond our capabilities of responding to, where then it's, a multi-county mutual aid event, and then if we even have to get the state involved.
Despite the burn bans lifting, Hitchcock reminds residents the county still has a controlled burn ordinance for unincorporated areas, requiring landowners to contact the county's communication center at 712-527-4871 prior to conducting a prescribed burn.
Within the ordinance, it's the requirement to call into the Mills County 911 communication center, and my folks in there just kind of ask a baseline set of questions, if you're going to be present, will you have water available, that type of thing, and then they just kind of document, and then that's the same information that, we provide to the fire chiefs just for an awareness piece.
Property owners within the county's 7-city limits should review local ordinances before burning of any type. Page County Emergency Management officials also lifted the county's burn ban Thursday. Plans for closing a stretch of Highway 2 west of Shenandoah were announced this week. Scott Sewer is District 4 planner for the Iowa Department of Transportation. Following a pre-construction meeting Tuesday afternoon, Sewer told KMA News the DOT rescheduled a full closure of Highway 2 from County Road L68, or 5 miles east of Sydney, to County Road J40, roughly 3 miles west of Shenandoah, from Thursday to April 13th. Plans call for concrete pavement work from the east of 342nd Avenue to the bridge over the East Nishtapada River and for repairs to the bridges along that same stretch. In the meantime, Sewers' work on the detour route was set for Tuesday.
So right now our contractor, which is Elder Corporation, is planning on starting with the patching on the detour route, and the detour route will be US 59, J32, and L68. And they plan to do the patching from April 7th through April 10th. And then once the patches are complete on the detour route, they will turn the traffic to the detour, and then they'll do the full closure on Iowa 2.
Sewer says pilot cars and flaggers will provide traffic control along the detour route during the patching work, which is expected to be completed by April 10th. Sewer says the resurfacing and bridge work along 2 is necessary to repair damage from the 2011 and 2019 Missouri River flooding events.
Needing to, replace those structures that are there, as well as the pavement that's there, because obviously it's, been, pressured with water and whatnot, over them two flooding events.
Previously, the timeline called for the project's completion by June 24th, but Sewers' crews are now aiming to have the project substantially completed by mid-July. State transportation officials were warning KMA Land residents of another issue this past week, one involving a texting scam. The Iowa Department of Transportation says the latest trend involves scammers sending texts claiming that individuals have unpaid fines or fees. Iowa DOT officials say they do not send out payment reminders by text and will never ask for personal or financial information through a message. In a recent interview with KMA News, Coloretta Police Chief Keith Brothers says anytime a call or email is unsolicited, the recipient should be on guard.
Any call that comes to you that's unsolicited, you immediately need to become instantly aware that this is probably a fraudulent phone scam or something along that information attempting to obtain information from you. When they start asking you for your address, your birthday, your social security number, bank account numbers, those are all just huge red flags.
Iowa DOT officials urge anyone who receives a suspicious text to avoid clicking links or providing information and to instead delete the message and report it as spam. My brother says anyone who believes they've been victimized by a scam and provided any financial information should call their financial institution or bank first. A contractor is set for a rock resurfacing project stretching across several miles of farm-to-market roads in Page County. At its regular meeting late Tuesday afternoon, the Page County Board of Supervisors unanimously awarded the contract to Shieldburg Construction for more than $568,000 for the farm-to-market resurfacing. County engineer J.D. King says Shieldburg's proposal was the lowest bid through the letting process with the Iowa Department of Transportation, covering over 58 miles of county roads.
Granular surfacing, granular, Class D rock, regular, 17,550 tons spread over 58 and a half miles, 9 different routes. If things go as planned, they'll be in a couple weeks to do it. It'll probably take a week.
The board also approved a resolution delegating King as the digital signing authority for the farm-to-market road rock project. On the topic of granular surfacing, during his weekly update, King also discussed a road grader training session scheduled for operators from multiple area counties in Page County.
We have 3 new operators. We've talked to the neighboring counties, both Taylor and Fremont, and they're going to send over 3 operators. We're going to work on a piece of road in Page County. Same outfit as we had our guys in.
Good.
A couple of years ago out there on Teak. And we do have 3 operators who have not been to that class. It's a 4-day class.
In other business Tuesday, the board also unanimously approved the courthouse grounds for Cruising Clarinda June 6th with an inclement weather date June 13th, for the Southwest Iowa Band Jamboree October 3rd, and for the Lighted Christmas Parade November 27th with the inclement weather date of November 28th. The approvals were contingent on anticipated work on the courthouse roof and clock tower, allowing individuals to gather around the courthouse. Supervisors Chair Judy Clark suggested the stipulation after Supervisor Todd Mayer inquired about how the equipment setup would be handled for the project.
They talked about putting everything on the parking lot over here.
Okay.
So if that's the case, then, you know, hopefully we can keep it away from everything, but we can make it conditional.
Okay.
I think probably when we pass that, maybe we should just make it conditional on wherever the roof work is at that time.
Supervisor Brian Rogers adds any areas off limits could be marked off. Well, funding is set for a pair of bridge replacement projects in Mills County. At its regular meeting Tuesday morning, the Mills County Board of Supervisors unanimously approved funding agreements for the replacement of a bridge along 215th Street over an unnamed tributary and a bridge further south along Painter Road. County Engineer Jacob Farrell says the estimate for both bridges is $750,000. The funding agreements outline the reimbursement process of federal dollars. For the 215th Street Bridge, Farrell says the dollars will flow through the county's farm-to-market account.
It's not technically our FM account, our HBP account, but it'll flow through our FM account and then reimbursed by federal funds. So it's kind of move all these things around. It's not out of the local budget. However, it is out of our state/federal funds.
Farrell says the exact cost for the bridges won't be finalized until they go out for bid later this year. He adds they hope to seek bids for the 215th Street Bridge this fall.
This is just getting our funding lined up. We won't actually have a contractor to run the project on August, potentially October. Hopefully, this could end us tonight.
Farrell says the Painter Road Bridge likely won't go out for bid until later in the winter because the two bridges are close together.
This one will be let a few months after 215th Street Bridge, since they're kind of close together. We don't want to have two closures on that road stretch, looking probably through the winter, so maybe a December, January construction date.
Farrell notes that while the Painter Road Bridge appears to be in the county's budget for fiscal year 2027, it'll still be 100% reimbursed with federal dollars through the Iowa DOT because it's not a farm-to-market route. Montgomery County is participating in a beauty contest, one involving infrastructure. Residents are asked to cast their vote for the county's 250th Street Bridge over the East Nishnabada River in the 2026 Bridge as a Fashion Model contest, sponsored by Dynamic Infrastructure. According to the organization's website, the competition is a great opportunity to showcase bridges from the unique perspective of engineers who design, maintain, and care for the essential structures. That's their words. Montgomery County Engineer Karen Albert told the county's Board of Supervisors Tuesday she learned of the contest in an email from the National Association of County Engineers.
We submitted a picture of one of the bridges on 250. Well, the bridge on 250th Street as part of the bridge as a fashion model competition. Voting is open from April 1st to April 14th. You know, we can put a link on the website. So if you go on there, if you check that out and vote for us, that would be great. We'd appreciate that.
Winners will be announced at the Innovation Breakfast event April 15th. Flooding from the March 2019 bomb cyclone damaged the bridge between Evergreen Avenue and Highway 48 southwest of Red Oak, forcing the county to close it and replace it with a new bridge. County officials reopened the new bridge in June 2024. A.M. Coron & Son was the general contractor for the project, totaling $2.1 million. Again, you can vote through the bridge through a link provided on Montgomery County's website or a link to Dynamic Infrastructure's website, and we have links available with the web story at kmaland.com. KMAland educators and lawmakers alike are still dismayed over the apparent demise of a bill allowing community colleges to offer four-year degrees. By a 56-36 vote last month, the Iowa House approved a measure establishing a pilot program allowing five of Iowa's two-year institutions to provide a limited number of bachelor degrees. Iowa Western Community College in Council Bluffs and Southwestern Community College in Creston were among the schools included in the program. But the bill appears dead for the 2026 Iowa legislative session after stalling in the Iowa Senate. State Senator Tom Shipley expressed his displeasure over the roadblock at a recent legislative briefing in Shenandoah.
I was more than disappointed that we didn't get that through. But that's where it's at now, and I was disappointed enough I'm just not going to say anymore.
Count State Senator Mark Costello among the disappointed. Costello discussed the need for schools offering four-year degrees in the region in a recent interview on KMA's Morning Line program.
I was for this bill. I think be good, really good for Southwest Iowa. You know, a lot of our four-year degrees, you end up having to go to Nebraska or Missouri. We don't really have much competition, and Iowa Western would, I think, be able to do that and be a good fit.
Speaking on KMA's Morning Line program Thursday morning, Iowa Western President Dr. Daniel Kinney says both he and local lawmakers were disappointed with the Senate's roadblock.
You know, this has happened in other states. It took Illinois a couple sessions to get it through and things like that. So we'll get back at it next year. But yeah, I'm disappointed. But I will tell you, our representatives, our senators, both in the House and the Senate down here in Southwest Iowa, very proactive in it, and they were all very disappointed too. So, you know, I need to personally thank them for all their work, but unfortunately, sometimes things just don't always go our way.
Kinney attributed the bill's Senate snag to two factors.
I think one is, I think there were some concerns that the cost of it. We got to redefine those numbers and things like that. But I think that the biggest concern was the private institutions that were very against it in the state of Iowa, that just didn't, you know, thought it would take away from their enrollment. And, you know, unfortunately it won't. The students that we're going to go out after with this type of ability to offer a degree are adult learners who are what I say time-bound and place-bound in our local community.
Kinney says the pilot program was needed to address what he calls an education desert, with a lack of four-year institutions in the region, save for Northwest Missouri State University and the Nebraska School.
A lot of those students probably aren't going to stay with us. It's the adult learners who can't. And then if you really look at affordability and look in the state of Iowa, our closest state university to us that's an Iowa university would be Iowa State University. That's about 2.5-3 hours away. And then on the private side, we'll be Des Moines, so that's a couple out, 2-2.5 hours away. And then Sioux City, you got a couple up there.
Despite the bill's shutdown this session, Kinney vows another push will take place during the 2027 Iowa legislative session. Nearly 2 years after the Arbor Day tornado outbreak, Tingley residents celebrated a major milestone last weekend. Residents gathered Sunday for an open house for Tingley's new community center. Back in April 2024, an EF2 tornado ripped through the small town, dealing significant damage to the former community center and multiple homes. Since then, rebuilding and fundraising efforts took place for a new community center and playground equipment. LaWanda Case is co-chair of the Tingley Betterment Foundation, the nonprofit organization helping spearhead fundraising efforts. Case told KMA News it's amazing to see the new center completed after the former venerable structure had been a hub of various community dinners and gatherings.
When it was taken out by the tornado, it was a big loss to the community. Obviously, the Lions Club met there several times, just different community dinners, and you don't realize how much you miss something until it's not there. So to have it rebuilt and know that it's going to be utilized again by numerous people is just, it's an amazing feeling.
Case's major fundraising efforts were spurred by an event the foundation organized last summer, including a silent auction raising nearly $36,000 for the community center and playground at Kumit. Initially eyeing a nearly 5-year timeline to rebuild, Case says that process was expedited by an outpouring of support from local businesses and residents.
When we did that, and of course the insurance money was starting to come in, people, more individuals got excited about it, and they also made donations as well. Our local First Interstate Bank and Kurt and Sandy Pierce Barker were a huge donator, as long as City State Bank here in town. And then there was some other families that came together and donated some significant amount of money.
Between fundraisers, donations, and insurance money, Case says the projects received around $500,000 in funding, in addition to financial contributions after contractors brought in the supplies for the new playground across the state for the new community center. Case says the equipment was entirely built by volunteers last fall. That wraps up this week in KMA Land. Be listening each week at this time for This Week in KMA Land. And for more information all the time, log on to KMALand.com, where you can also hear this program in its entirety. For the entire KMA News team, this is Mike Peterson. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. This Week in KMA Land, a presentation of KMA News, keeping the region informed for 100 years.